Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. We are continuing our coverage of HBO Max's The Penguin and Amazon Prime's Too Old to Die Young, the Nicholas Winding Refn show. This evening, we are talking about episode 5 of both shows, Homecoming for The Penguin, The Fool for Too Old to Die Young. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing all right, Bob. Since the episode title of Too Old to Die Young as the Fool, I feel the fool for allowing you to make me watch this. I need to wash my eyes out.
You like Copenhagen Cowboy so much, Matt.
I enjoy the narrative, per se, but I need to wash my eyes out from what some of the things I saw in this episode.
It's a pretty messed up show.
Pretty graphic, Bob.
Yeah. Well, that was Donald Trump's America, Matt.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
To start with the homecoming, Matt, let me just start by asking you, the Penguin's on TikTok, Matt. How do you feel about the Penguin being on TikTok?
TikTok is canon in Matt Reeves' The Batman universe.
Do you think Catwoman's going to be on TikTok in Batman 2?
Batman is going to utilize TikTok to solve a murder.
That's crazy, dog. That's crazy.
Which villain could utilize TikTok in this way?
Joker, the Riddler, and Anarchy seem the natural ones to go to.
You know what I'm thinking, Bob?
What's that?
Clock King. Get it? TikTok.
Well, Matt says this because, spoilers, he just read Batman Killing Time. And if you don't want to spoilers to that, jump ahead. But in Batman Killing Time, it's what if the Clock King was hardcore?
We got to come back for the Clock King around here.
This TikTok stuff is in service of showing what a hateable Zoomer Sal Maroney's son Taj Maroney is. And so in that way, it was pretty amusing.
Taj doesn't last long, right, Bob? Doesn't Taj die in this episode?
Penguin kills him and his mother, spoilers, later in the episode.
Alive. That was a classic spoiler warning immediately after the spoiler there. Good job.
If you watch this before you watch the episode of The Penguin,
something's wrong with you.
We do have an interesting motif in this episode where Sophia has Johnny Vitti tied up in the cold in the basement of the state. He's naked, and she just dumps water on him and leaves him there to freeze. Whereas Penguin dumps gas on Taj and his mom. Which were you more put off by, the cold water or the gas?
The cold water. I'm not saying I've ever been naked outside having water dropped on me in the freezing cold.
But notice, listeners, he's not saying that he hasn't.
But I do know what cold water feels like on my skin. And I can imagine what that would feel like, very cold water. However, gasoline, I've had very little gasoline poured on me other than my foot, Bob. I'm sure it burns if you have open wounds. I know the smell would be bad.
I've gotten gas on my skin before. It doesn't feel great.
But about if you're covered in it, though. I don't know what that would feel.
As soon as you smell the gas, you know what he's going to do.
Oh, yeah. He's going to light you on fire. That's the next step. But I'm just saying, I don't know what gas really feels like to someone submerged in it.
Well, listeners, maybe Uncanny Treks will begin its pivot to YouTube by dumping gasoline on Matt. Matt, speaking of things that Penguin was being very careful with. He's being very careful to set Taj and his mother on fire. He's also really protective of his mushrooms. Did you think that was sweet?
Honestly, mushrooms require way too much time and effort to produce, so I know where he's coming from with that. I've never tried to actually cultivate them myself.
Ironic, because they seem to grow in the wild at the drop of a hat.
Yes, but the mushrooms he wants, specifically, the spores, the way they have to grow, I don't even think I can make it past like the documentation on how to grow that stuff. I'm pretty sure most of his product's destroyed looking at it.
He only saves 3 buckets or so.
He acts like he saves them, but I'm sure those are probably ruined as well.
They looked okay.
But if you want the good mushrooms, the magic kind, that requires a lot more skill as far as cultivating, I believe, than it would just throw in some spores in your backyard and calling it a day.
Nice. I will say, I was pretty impressed by how this show handled Sal Maroney getting out of prison. So Penguin sends a screw to kill Sal, and Sal gets stabbed. But when my boy and I, who are watching it, immediately caught it, he's getting out. So he kills the guy and gets out of prison with his keys off screen. I thought that was pretty cool.
It reminded me of how you'll see characters escape in the comic books. I could just imagine this in a panel of him step by step. It would have been on one page.
Matt, were you surprised that neither Vic nor the Penguin killed Ma Penguin? It did really seem like they were teasing Ma Penguin getting killed this episode.
Even when Vic first goes and meets with her and corrects her and saying that he's not the Penguin, he's here to help her or whatever. Even then, I was like, okay, he's buttering her up because he's going to either put a bullet in the back of her head or he's killing her. And by poisoning her food or something. Something's going on here. Didn't play through, but I thought this may be a next step of loyalty for Vic.
You got to kill your bro's mom for
me. Yeah. It's like, she's holding me back, but I can't kill her myself.
I'd go to hell. Well, they leave Ma Penguin alive, but Penguin and Vic go underground. And as soon as they go underground, I yelled at my boy as we were watching. We're going Azbat style.
Yeah. All right. So, Bob, we have both the Batman and the Penguin with underground hideouts in Gotham City. Do you think their lines connect in any way?
What I'm hoping for is off panel, off screen, after the Batman, he's messed up after the events of that movie. And so he has a young man named Jean-Paul Valley, who's the new Batman. And so in episode 7 of this show, we're just going to have Jean-Paul Valley as Bats, or as I like to call him, as Bats, show up. That's my dream.
I just want to see some weird like scene where Penguin and Vic are just exploring the subway line and walking down, and then they just stumble upon Robert Pattinson in the Batcave.
That would be pretty funny. He could have a funny promo image of them all sitting in a sewer tunnel, sipping coffee together, Penguin, Vic, and Robert Pattinson.
Just hanging out down here.
I was expecting, with my enthusiasm for Azbats, Matt would be, no, I just read Night Quest, The Crusade. It's not what you think it is, Bob. Stop romanticizing the past.
It really isn't. Night Quest, man, just, it goes downhill. Night Quest, they just did not have what they needed there. Nightfall was fantastic. The build-up to Nightfall was awesome. Night's End, from what I remember, the ending itself is pretty good.
It's also a lot shorter than Nightfall and Night's Quest, as I recall.
It is. And you had to keep up with two separate stories in Night Quest, and neither one of them were great.
You're saying you didn't enjoy The Search or The Crusade, Matt?
No.
Well, Matt, since we've gone on to 90s Batman, is there anything else to say about episode 5 of The Penguin Homecoming?
No, Bob, but... Let's talk about this other show that we compare it to that, man.
What's our tagline for The Fool for them?
Okay, Bob. I'm just going to call it Natural Porn Killers.
Oh, that's good, Matt. That's good. I hope you took a break after you thought about that. Have you got yourself a Dr. Pepper or a beer? You deserve it. So Martin is going on a creepy mission for Damien in Albuquerque, Matt.
Yes, a very creepy mission where he meets some very creepy people and they do some very creepy things that are not okay.
Let me begin with a joke. I was watching a Golden Age Hollywood movie yesterday and it had a line that I thought was really funny. I texted this to a couple of people from Albuquerque who agreed. But basically, two women are talking and one of them is like, yeah, Albuquerque's a hard town for blondes, man. Dudes come down here and they want Latin glamour. It I thought was very funny.
That is funny. But man, there's nothing funny in this episode.
Well, actually there is, Matt. We have a pair of pornography brothers, I'm going to call them. You got your property brothers, you got your pawn shop brothers, you got your pornography brothers. So you got your pornography brothers. Do you recognize the voice of the older of the pornography brothers?
I really don't know, and I didn't want to go back and listen to it again, so tell me who is it, Bob.
So think about a certain cartoon that's mocking Johnny Quest.
Venture Brothers? Oh, that's Dr. Venture. Okay.
Yeah, the older pornography.
Oh, wow. Venture. I watched a little bit of that, but that's neat, though, if I use that.
James Urbaniak, I think, is his name. He shows up in a lot of stuff, like... There's a terrible show called Homeland, but he has a really cool cameo as a guy who does a lie detector test in that show. He's a guy who just pops up sometimes in dark TV.
And this is definitely very dark TV, Bob.
Well, so Matt, did you find the opening to this episode, The Fool, very creepy as James Urbaniak, the elder of the pornography brothers, narrates to this poor young twink who he's about to have assaulted by a mob of angry cowboys?
Bob, it is like disturbing for so many multiple reasons on so many different levels. But let me just start off by saying this format of how it's presented, this casting couch type scenario, is the basis for an entire genre of pornography that a lot of males in America, I'm sure, watch. When you go and you see this scene, but you're seeing the gay porn version of what most males have probably seen the straight version of.
It's interesting because for the straight male viewer, I mean, I think this genre does exist in gay porn.
Oh, too, sure.
Of course. But for the straight male viewer, it serves to highlight the creepy assumptions of this genre of porn, right? By allowing the straight male viewer to identify with the guy who's about to get assaulted by multiple guys rather than with, as is usually the case, identifying with the camera guy or the person initiating.
Some of the things that he was saying are the same things you hear from the girls that you're listening to this dude. This is coming off way creepier, but it's just a gender swap. I hear these types of things in the videos. Then it just gets worse because it starts getting more violent. And then that physical piece comes in where they're starting to explore the dude's mouth with their hands. That dude puts his hand in his mouth, gives him the pill. You're thinking, does this really go down on the ones that I watch too? Are these women drugged? Is that why they're so complacent? And then there's rape in the first 5 minutes of the show.
It's a really dark opening. And it's a pattern that we'll talk about it again in a minute, but it's a pattern that the episode does at another point later on. Not the same genre of porn. Were you surprised that after this very intense, very violent opening, we find out our pornography brothers are churchgoers?
Why wouldn't they be churchgoers, Bob?
That's a good question, Matt. Why wouldn't they be churchgoers? So last episode, we had the police detectives all chanting and spelling fascism. This episode, we have the pornography brothers Pentecostal preacher is giving a sermon, but he's talking about the importance of the swastika and the importance of magic. What's creepier, Matt? The fascism chant from the cops or the Pentecostal preacher talking about Nazism and the occult?
I'm going to go with the swastika and magic because I don't like magic. I'm just going to leave it with that, Bob. I mean, okay, they're both awful.
Oh, man, that would be funny if Matt like becomes like a hardline anti-fascist because he fascists famously are in, but a lot of them are into mysticism.
Yeah.
And Matt's just like, nope, fascists, they're into magic too much. I'm becoming a hardline rationalist communist. I oppose fascism and their sorcery.
You think I can win on that kind of political ticket, Bob?
I think it's worth a try.
I'm anti-magic, guys.
But on the other hand, Matt, not to generalize, but dudes do love their betting rituals and women do love their astrology. So there's a lot of magical thinking in 21st century America.
That's true. But would I lose the Christian vote?
No, if you play it right, you could get the Christian vote.
Yeah, but I have to play it
correctly. Yeah. That's a very delicate dance. So, Matt, I wanted to ask, I think I want to ask this on two levels. I want to ask you this as somebody just watching a Too Old to Die Young. So just based on Too Old to Die Young, what do you suppose Nicholas Winding Refn likes filming more? Does he like filming creepy things like the opening? Does he like filming driving at night? Or does he like to film people sitting at a bar or a counter or staring off into space?
For this show, he definitely loves filming people in the bars and counters. I mean, I feel like that's pretty much all this show has been.
I think that's fair. I might argue for one of the others, but I definitely see where you're coming from with that. Now, if you think about this show and Copenhagen Cowboy together, would that change your answer?
I'm thinking back to Copenhagen Cowboy. Some pretty creepy things in Copenhagen Cowboy. I remember some driving at night scenes, but not as many.
I'm thinking driving at night, but now that I think about it, maybe that's less Copenhagen Cowboy, and maybe that's just the other Nicholas Winding Refn films I've seen.
Probably, because I don't remember a ton of scenes of them driving in Copenhagen Cowboy. But I do remember creepy things, and definitely the bars and sitting encounters were
Maybe in Copenhagen Cowboy, it was a higher percentage of creepy things and a lower percentage of people staring at bars and counters. So, Matt, have you ever been in a bar and approached two pornography brothers before?
No, Bob. I've never met a pornographer that I'm aware of, nor have I met a porn actress that I'm aware of.
Interesting. Now, I do have a question. So you don't know these people, so this is just speculation.
Okay.
But I feel like if I were a pornography brother and I was picking up this guy at the bar to do pornography, would you maybe want to check the guy's cock at the bar to make sure it's what you want for whatever you're doing before you just bring him back to the pornography warehouse?
I don't know, Bob, because I feel like at the pornography warehouse, there's such a variety of actors and actresses come in all shapes and sizes that they would find a place for him.
That's a surprisingly body positive answer, Matt. I do like that on the one hand, we're imagining these pornography brothers as really sick, depraved rapist. But on the other hand, they're open-minded, versatile, and body positive. That's a very interesting dichotomy.
They're very inclusive, Bob, yes.
Very inclusive, Matt. Inclusion is so important.
Yes.
So the other thing I was going to say is like, it was really staged. Granted, actually, I think you could argue this about the car chase too, but this scene in the middle of the episode is really staged like a porn scene, where it's the older pornography brother, James Urbaniak, and his date. They're like trying to get Martin to like start doing, and they keep teasing him groping him and such. But the reveal is like, instead of Martin's cock coming out, it's his gun. Kills them. And when he shoots them, they both have an orgasmic death fate. The synth music hits, and the aesthetics of it are totally pornographic. And I just thought that was really clever and unsettling.
Yeah, that was my shot of the episode. There's something about where he's showing the phone to Martin, but you're not able to see what's on the phone. The first time he shows it, he's showing him something just to gauge his interest. And it's not something crazy. But then he flips it back around, changes to something else and shows him. And then you can tell he's really testing Martin at that time. So he showed him something extremely nasty. And then that's when they feel him to see if he's actually hard, which you're right, is the cock. But it's his gun, but it's hilarious. The whole scene of the woman reaching down, oh, well, this doesn't seem like you are hard enough for that. And so, nasty.
Yeah.
But definitely one of the better scenes in this episode, although incredibly filthy.
Well, and then the third scene, I have a read on that I think is meant to imitate the rhythms of pornography, the car chase, because the car chase is really interesting and really visually striking, but it also settles into this boring rhythm of the younger property brother and little Billy are chasing Martin after he killed James Urbaniak, the older pornography brother. But because they're in an electric car, they can't catch him. And it just goes on for hours, and it just seems rhythmic and
what's almost boring.
And it really does feel like that's the dilemma of sex, right? Sex is actually not that interesting. And so it's hard to film. Once the sex act starts, it's hard to keep the interest going. The thing just plays out on the camera.
There was once a graphic I saw that showed like your average porn video and the viewing habits of most people who are watching said video. And what was fascinating was the first minute is usually watched in its entirety for the setup. So you see the girl or whatever in the know.
You got to understand the plot in the
character. Right. You get to see, it's mainly just to gauge if you're attracted to the actors or actresses that were in the film to get an idea of what they look like. And then you fast forward a little, it would be like a little more when the girl is completely naked. Then it would be fast forward a little more to where she's giving a oral sex. And then that would remain there for about a minute. That would fast forward to actual penetration. Then it would fast forward to if whatever the next level of, like, but it would stay on certain areas for only a minute or two. And then, of course, the final shot would always be fast forwarded to. And there would be this long area where you're talking about, which is exactly what this car chase was, Bob.
It's a funny point. I would say, though, in counter to that point, it wasn't this just such a better car chase, though, than like the CGI crap and the pilot of the penguin?
Oh, yeah. Anything that's shot without CGI, to me, is better. And maybe that's just the old man in us, Bob, though.
I think a lot of young people are tired of the excesses of CGI, too. You do have these long, slow moments of the chase, and they just can't catch up to Martin's car.
Right.
But then to continue your analogy about skipping ahead, you actually have the collisions.
Correct.
Of the cars.
And then it starts back up again. It's this extended allusion to sex. Definitely, that's what they were going for.
Isn't it really messed up when you and your boy are chasing the guy who killed your older brother and you get into a fight with what you're going to play on the radio with your boy? Yeah. Isn't that pretty messed up?
That's pretty messed up, Bob. Especially when freaking Barry Manilow's Mandy comes over the speakers.
Matt, you love Barry Manilow. He's one of your favorites.
No, Bob, I don't like Barry Manilow.
Oh, so Phil Collins is real. Peter Gabriel is real.
Fine.
Barry Manilow, not real.
They're not even in the same genre. I don't. Why are you even bringing Barry Manilow and Neil Diamond maybe in the same? But I don't care for either of them much.
Man, I love the divisions you make in 80s rock. I'm very interested. So, Matt, did you enjoy this episode's anti-electric car bias?
So, Bob, my vision for the future is that we just like have this combination of vehicles. I don't understand why people seem to think it has to be all or nothing. Why don't we have electric vehicles for short range trips and gas vehicles for long range trips, or like hybrids that can handle that? And then we could still not lose all these jobs and factories because we're still going to make a lot of these things.
I'm a man who's a very pessimistic guy.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think the world's going to get better. But I try not to be too apocalyptic about climate change.
Mm-hmm.
I think climate change is going to be very bad, but I don't think it's going to be the end of human civilization, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But then I did read an article in The Guardian last week, and one of the things that absorbs carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is forest and the ocean.
Yes.
it's not doing that anymore.
Oh.
As of the last couple of years, on average, the oceans and the forests are not absorbing nearly as much carbon as they used to. There have always been scenarios of climate change, which, again, I'm not a scientist, but there are scenarios of climate change where us destabilizing the Earth's climate puts us on like runaway transformations that actually could endanger human civilization as we know it. And I'm not saying that that is definitely what's happening, but I think the oceans and the forest are no longer absorbing carbon at the rate we expect. That maybe suggests that that's the direction we're moving. So in that scenario, how much gas emissions do we need to be allowing at all, or how much carbon emissions from gas powered vehicles we need to be allowing at all? I'm not a scientist, but it seems like we're in a really
probably not a lot. So that's when you start walking, guys. Start walking.
I mean, trains are good. Back to happier topics.
Yeah.
If the major conversation partner with this episode is pornography, then I would say the second major conversation partner is Breaking Bad. So did you like how this episode basically turned into an even darker episode of Breaking Bad in the last 20 minutes?
Yeah, it got real dark at the end, too. The whole twist ending alone. The show, Bob, it gets you. I hate it. This is good. It's fun to watch, but it's just such a slow burn. And I had to get through the car chase that went on forever. But then I get to this scene and this is insane. This is well-written and good stuff. And I want to watch more, but I'm still going to wash my eyes out.
You already told us your shot of the episode.
Yeah. What's yours, Bob?
Mine is also super, super creepy, but it's the younger pornography brother is hosing down his date, I guess as a precursor to a scene. And it's a really creepy setup of a shower that's in the wall and elevated over the floor where Rob is standing. And so the light on the shower and the girl in the shower who's naked and getting hosed down is green, while Rob is in this pink light. The younger pornography brother is in this pink light as he hoses her. It's so creepy, but so visually striking. You also have Rob has a cross tattoo that's really unnerving.
Yes, and let me just say this, that the woman is attractive, but there is nothing sexual about this scene because it's a lot like watching an animal being sprayed down. It's gross.
Yeah, it's really trying to make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, who is your character of the episode?
Bob, no one. I would not choose a character in this episode because it is so disgusting.
So Matt's going with no one. I'm going to go with Little Billy. He's so creepy. And there's so many weird shots of him just hanging out of a window, looking at Martin,
and
just hanging behind the camera, looking at that poor twink who's about to get assaulted at the start. Him just hanging in the car with the younger pornography brother. It's Little Billy is such a creep. Apparently that actor did show up as a guy who works for Gus in a warehouse for a couple of episodes late in Breaking Bad.
Oh, wow. That's a small connection there.
That's our Little Billy. This has been Penguin vs. Too Old to Die Young. Thanks for listening. Join us next week for episode 6. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.